hoping to steer the conversation back into safe territory, because, wow, seriously, do these guys have no boundaries? Camille leans forward, placing her fingers on her chin.
Well, good. He's nice, but we're still learning American culture.
Has there been anything that's surprised you? I ask. I know that she and Lucien have lived in the U.S. for about 18 months now. Camille considers my question.
The people here, Americans, you are very friendly, very open,
she says in her elegant accent.
Oh, and the portion size, it's way too much food.
This gets a chuckle out of a few of us, but Lucien only shakes his head.
He's fantastic.
I have a new friend. We meet at dog park. She is dating and says the single scene here is horrible.
A few heads nod around me. No comment. Camille continues, having captured an audience now.
She says American men are...
She waves one hand in a dismissive manner.
No matter. I am happy. I have my mate.
Just say it,
Tate says.
Well, she says American men... Why don't you moan during sex?
My cheeks begin to burn, probably turning a bright red. Well, grab some popcorn because things are about to get salty. Camille's question pulls a deep chuckle out of Tate.
I don't know. Years of silently masturbating so my parents wouldn't hear me?
The guys laugh.
That and because I'm usually out of breath from doing all the work,
Saint says. Okay, so they're going there. I try not to squirm with embarrassment. Reeves nods.
So many reasons. Trying not to come, focusing on getting my partner there because I'll finish regardless.
Camille leans forward in interest.
I just yodel. I figure it's way sexier,
Saint says with a wink. The guys laugh and someone slaps the back of Saint's head. Alex doesn't contribute to the conversation, and I'm very grateful for that. The last thing I want to do is remember what he was like in bed. Though those last few months, we really had more of a roommate's situation going on.
I think it's bold of you to assume hockey players are having frequent sex,
Wild says with a smirk. This pulls a chuckle out of Alex, who has otherwise been a bit surly tonight. As the conversation takes a crude turn, I duck back into the kitchen, rearranging the fridge to try to accommodate the six-pack Saint left on my counter. It's moments like these that make me wonder if hanging tight to my role as team owner was smart after all. I'm sure that Grandpa Pete had no problem being one of the guys in situations like this, joining in on their conversations about women and dating. Although he'd been married for 50 happy years, he had plenty of wild stories from before he met Grandma, and the man was never one to miss a chance to tell a dirty joke. Meanwhile, I'll never be able to chime in on a conversation like that without being accused of hitting on the players. And that's not a path I'm ever willing to go down again. Not just because it would be wildly unprofessional, but because I have almost 5 years' worth of proof that dating a hockey player isn't good for my mental health. My phone buzzes with a notification from the front desk that the pizza has arrived, and I make my way back through the living room to the front door, pulling it open as I hear the first knock. But for the second time tonight, I'm caught off guard. It's not the delivery man standing before me. At least, not the one I was expecting. It's Holt, carrying a stack of pizza boxes that obscures most of my view of him. My body instantly reacts to his presence, tensing up at first, then flooding with a rush of warmth that takes me by surprise. My jaw hangs slack, and suddenly words feel like a distant memory. There's only one word on my mind. Holt. Not a sentence, not a greeting, just his name. It's all I can manage. I gulp down my nerves, pressing my shoulders back to summon any bit of confidence I can muster.
I didn't think you'd come.
Smooth, Eden.
I mean, thank you for getting the pizzas.
Holt shakes his head, although I can't see anything but his cool gray eyes from behind the stack of pizzas. But just one look into those eyes has me feeling unsteady, the same way I did all those years ago.
It was nothing. Delivery guy was in the lobby, asking the front desk about buzzing up to your unit. I volunteered to take it from there, save the guy a few minutes.
Did you tip him? Holt's gaze narrows, and I don't have to see his mouth to know that he's smirking.
Of course I did. I'm not a monster.
I give him a warm smile. It's still so surreal having him here. Well, thank you. Let me know what I owe you, okay? I take the stack of boxes from him, despite his protests that he's happy to carry them the rest of the way. It's a much-needed distraction to keep my mind from playing out all the ways I'd like to repay him. Maybe with another one of those toe-curling kisses we shared so many years ago. Better yet, I could give him what I wanted so badly to give him that night. What we almost shared before he slowed me down. What was it about him that made me want to give him everything so quickly? I hardly knew him before that night, after all. But in the span of a few hours, this kind, mysterious man looked beyond my family's status that night and saw who I truly am, a deeper part of me that I haven't shared with anyone since. Not with Alex, not with anyone. And I saw Holt, too. He invited me into the darkness of his past, the goals he had for after he graduated from Sutton. When we kissed, it felt like I'd known him all my life. I would have given him everything that night, had he not stopped us. I bat away the memory with a few deep breaths, focusing instead on setting out the pizza boxes where the trays of fajitas used to be. Now is no time to be fantasizing about false realities. Not when Holt's own words are still echoing in my head.
It's in the past. Let's move on.
I've barely opened the first pizza box when Tate appears with an empty plate, grabbing two slices and smashing them together like a sandwich. Being that I didn't so much as taste a fajita earlier, I nab an extra large slice for myself, draping it over a plate before escaping to the living room, which has quickly emptied thanks to the alluring scent of pepperoni wafting in from the kitchen. I settle into one of the leather love seats, blotting the grease off my slice with a napkin before bringing it to my lips. The cheese stretches off the crust, like it should on a true East Coast slice, and for a moment, I feel at ease again. That is, until Holt takes the seat next to mine.
Is this seat taken?
He asks, arching a brow. It is now, by you. There's an edge of sass to my voice that I wasn't quite planning on, but Holt doesn't seem the slightest bit bothered by it.
Great, because I thought you might need something to wash that down with.
I glance down to see a brown paper grocery bag in his grip. I didn't notice it when he arrived, what with the leaning tower of pizzas he was carrying, but now he has my full attention. The bag crinkles as he reaches in and pulls out a slender glass bottle filled with a light pink liquid. Rosé.
It's your favorite, right?
He asks, presenting me with the bottle. I accept it, careful to make sure our fingers only brush briefly on the handoff. But even that split second is enough for the electricity to leap from his fingertips to mine. How did you know?
I may have asked your assistant,
he says, a devious smile threatening the corner of his lips.
I actually thought about bringing it in a flask. For old time's sake.
A quiet chuckle escapes me at the memory of us sharing sips of whiskey in his room at the frat house. Now I feel a little sheepish about the fact I wasn't brave enough to extend the invitation for tonight's gathering to him personally. I had my assistant, Aspen, call him instead. I don't need anything to help me drink this stuff any faster than I already do, I say, grinning. I'll grab us some glasses. Before I can get up, Holt shakes his head, reaching back into the bag and pulling out an insulated cup that looks like a cross between a stemless wine glass and a travel coffee mug.
I got you this too. Figured you might need it with all the stress of your new job. You could bring it to the office, maybe with coffee though.
This time my laugh is anything but quiet. You have no idea. And just like that, it's as if no time has passed between us. The 6 years that sped by between me scrawling a note on his dresser and him stepping into my office last week feel like the blink of an eye. This is the same man I spilled my heart to after a few sips of whiskey. The one whose bloody knuckles I tended to, even when he insisted I could leave. The same man who, in a matter of hours, came to know me almost better than I knew myself. And that scared me. But looking at him now, I wonder what it was that I was so afraid of.
Chapter 8. Holt. It's my first official day reporting for duty, and I have a meeting with Eden and Les at 9 in her office at Elite Airlines Stadium. The first hockey game is only days away, and there's been some talk in the media about another protest. It pisses me off to think about what Eden has to endure. She comes into work every day to do her best, and yet some troublemaking idiots want to make her life more difficult. It only makes me want to help her more. Must be some underdog complex. Fuck the naysayers and all that. The building is impressive. A steel and glass structure where the hockey team plays also houses the team leadership's offices. I've never been here for a game, but I'm sure the experience is quite different. The building is eerily silent and deserted on a Monday morning. A lone security guard waits at the main doors, and a cleaning crew buffs the concrete floors on the ground level. But other than that, it's quiet. I make my way to the elevators, remembering the somber look on Eden's face the last time we were alone together here. She seemed relaxed enough at the team dinner at her place, so hopefully she's settling into her role here with a little more confidence. When I reach the floor to her office, Eden's assistant is seated at a glass desk just outside her door. Her nameplate reads, Aspen Ford. Hello. I pause in front of her. She looks up at me and pulls a pencil from her mouth, then blinks at me twice.
Holt, right?
That's me. Her mouth curls into a slow smile, and I wonder what Eden's told her about me. About us. Probably nothing, because there is no us.
Great. Eden and Les are inside. They're expecting you. Go on in.
I nod, and then let myself inside Eden's office, pushing open the heavy frosted glass door. They're already seated at the conference table, and Eden's gaze lifts to mine the second she spots me. Morning, I say. Her full mouth lifts into a smile.
Good morning. You're right on time. Coffee?
Today, Eden's dressed in a pair of black pants, glittery ballet flats, and a pale pink blouse. It's decidedly feminine, and I love that she's confident enough to be herself. She doesn't try to mold herself to the standards of what others might say is needed for the leader of a sports franchise. I shake my head. Not a coffee guy. Thanks, though.
Tea?
She pulls in a breath, drawing my gaze to the delicate gold necklace resting between her breasts. My heart hammering, I force my eyes to meet hers. I'm good, but thanks for the offer.
I couldn't live without my morning Joe,
Les says. Jeez, for a second I forgot he was even here. It's easy to get wrapped up in Eden. She's striking and poised and so fucking tempting. Stop, Holt. Giving myself a mental shake, I take a seat in the same chair as last time so I have a view of both Eden and the door to her office.
So, should we get down to business?
She asks, tapping her pen on the table beside a black leather planner embossed with her initials, EMW. It occurs to me that I don't know her middle name. Marie, maybe? Michelle? Mary?
The travel schedule is the first thing we should discuss,
Les says, looking between Eden and me with a frown. If he's worried I'm going to blow off traveling with the team, he's wrong. I take my role seriously. Even if that means flying to Saskatoon in the middle of January, I'll be there. I'll need to buy a new parka, but I'll be there. Whatever you need. I dig my smartphone from my pocket and pull up my calendar. Eden smiles.
There is a home game this Thursday, and then we leave Friday midday for a game on Saturday in Detroit, and stick around the Midwest for a game in Ohio on Monday. We're back late Monday night, probably not until midnight or so.
After jotting the dates and locations down in my calendar, I nod to Eden. Sounds fine. No issues here.
I hope you don't have any pets.
Eden's watching me from over the rim of her coffee mug. Just like her outfit, her mug is unapologetic, sporting the phrase,
"Let's keep the dumb fuckery to a minimum today," written in fancy cursive writing. I have to squint to make out the words, and when I do, my mouth twitches. "No pets," I say. Her eyes lift to mine.
"Not even a goldfish?"
For a second, I'm speechless, transported back in time. It was something we talked about that night we spent together, Eden admitting that growing up as an only child, she was often lonely. She said she'd always wanted a pet, but her parents never allowed it. I stupidly suggested she get a goldfish. She teased me, saying fish were a big commitment, and she didn't know if she had the time. "Hadn't made the commitment yet. You?" I managed to say, my voice raspy. With a laugh, she shakes her head, and Les watches us like we're insane. "Maybe we are." "No pets," I say firmly. "No girlfriend, just me." Her gaze lingers on mine for a minute longer.
"Still, I know it's a lot to drop everything and travel, so thank you."
"You're more than welcome." As Eden presses on with the fall's remaining trips and events, Les's cell phone begins vibrating on the table.
"Excuse me for just a minute,"
he says, standing and frowning down at the thing.
"Take your time,"
Eden says, enjoying another sip of her coffee as Les exits her office, closing the door behind him. Now that we're alone, she turns her attention back to me.
"Why aren't you dating anyone?"
"The girl I once knew wasn't always so bold around me. I remember Eden as being sort of shy that night, ducking her chin when I asked her a question, fidgeting and tucking her hair behind her ear, ready to flee from my bed at any moment. That's the way I remember her. But then something shifted. She let her walls down and got comfortable. She opened up to me. We lay down together and she rested her head on my chest. I liked that part. Never been much of a cuddling type of guy, but I enjoyed it that night with her. Hell, I enjoyed everything that night with Eden. I realize she's still waiting for me to answer her question, the one about why I'm still single. "No time, I guess. I probably work too much." She shifts, still watching me from across the table.
"I see. That makes sense. You've grown your company, your reputation. It's impressive what you've done."
I nod, but dodge the compliment. "What about you? Has there been anyone since Braun?" The second the words leave my mouth, I regret them. It's none of my damn business, but Eden doesn't seem offended or bothered by my question.
"No,"
she says softly.
"Before he got sick, my grandfather tried to introduce me to his golfing partner's godson."
"Did you meet with him?" She nods.
"Yes, but it didn't work out."
"Why not?" I'm curious, and since she's entertaining my questions without so much as a pause, I'm rolling with it.
"There was no chemistry. At all,"
she says sternly.
"He was about as exciting as a baked potato."
An easy chuckle tumbles from my lips. "Gotcha. So we're both single." A smile lifts her full mouth.
"It would appear so."
Les comes back in, pocketing his phone.
"How's it coming along, kids?"
"I think we're about done here,"
Eden says. Les nods toward me.
"You want me to show you around? I can give you a tour of the control room."
I stand. "Thanks, that sounds good. I need to learn the facility where Eden works if I'm going to be here to support her, though my primary role will be shadowing her when she's away from this place. On the road, moving from city to city, hotel to hotel. But I have 2 hours to kill before I told my mom I'd visit, so I might as well make good use of it. Let me know if you need anything," I say to Eden. "Otherwise, I'll see you on game day." She nods, waving her fingers at us.
"Have fun, boys."
We leave Eden behind, hunched over her laptop with that damn coffee mug. Les and I use every bit of that 2 hours to get me acquainted with the building and the security systems currently in place. It's a state-of-the-art setup, and I'm feeling much more optimistic than I have any right to. Because if life's taught me anything, it's that whatever can go wrong, will.
"You want something to eat?"
Mom asks, opening her fridge and peering inside. I don't know what she could be looking for, because she hasn't been here in 6 weeks. Surely whatever was in her fridge before she left for rehab is rotten by now. And again, maybe it's just a mom thing. asking your kid if he's eaten. And the truth is, I am hungry. I came right here from my meeting with Eden and Les and haven't had lunch yet, but it's not her responsibility to feed me. She can barely remember to feed herself, and the last thing I want to do is put pressure on her. My mom's always been a little bit fragile, unstable. I'm good, thanks. She nods and lets the fridge close. Stepping away from the kitchen, she runs her hand along the clean countertop, humming to herself. I sent a cleaning crew by a few days ago when I heard she was getting out, so she didn't have to come back to a dusty apartment. Everything go okay? You feeling good? I ask, settling into the armchair in the corner of the living room.
I feel just fine, she waves me off. Between you and your brother, I swear you're like two mother hens.
She chuckles to herself, but her humor is lost on me, because, yeah, of course my brother and I worry about her. She's been addicted to pain pills for almost 2 decades, and I really hope this time her getting clean will stick, but who the hell knows? I've learned to roll with the punches. 1 week she's doing great, and the next I'll come by and find her as high as a kite. I just came by to make sure you were doing okay, getting settled in again, I say, carefully hedging. She looks at me with irritation.
I said I'm fine.
I know. And I wanted to tell you that I'm going to be gone for a couple of days, and more often coming up, I got a new job. Turning in my direction, she smiles.
Yeah? Good for you, baby. Security for some big CEO or celebrity this time?
I nod. Something like that. You remember Eden Wynn? Her eyes flash with recognition. I made the mistake of mentioning once I had a history with the former governor's daughter. Mom's expression hardens.
I thought you learned your lesson a long time ago. You'll never be enough for a girl like that.
With an annoyed breath, I rise to my feet. It's just a job, Mom.
Good. Because it won't do you any good to start thinking pretty thoughts about girls like her. I saw what happened last time.
She didn't know shit about what happened last time. But then again, maybe she's more perceptive than I thought. Maybe she knew me withdrawing and closing myself off had a lot more to do with Eden's rejection than I let on. I know, Mom. Don't worry. I've got to get going. Take care of yourself, I say as I hand her a few bills. She curls her hand around the cash, giving me a grateful look.
I always do, don't I?
I raise a brow in her direction. That's debatable, but the last thing I want to do is get into yet another argument with my mom. Talk to you soon. She only nods in response.
Chapter 9. Eden. It's strange to be working at my grandfather's desk, a dark mahogany piece of furniture, large and masculine. It suits the office nicely, but it doesn't suit me. I wonder how long I'll feel like an imposter. Absently, I flip through a coffee table book sitting on the edge of the desk. This one is filled with images of dramatic landscapes from around the world, photographed in black and white. I have no idea who bought it or why it's here. It's just a generic part of a generic office that I haven't made mine yet. A photo near the middle of the book makes me pause. It's of a volcanic eruption. The sky looks normal, but everything around it has been blown to smithereens, the trees toppled over and bare of any branches or leaves. It's strange. I feel at home as I run my fingertip over the glossy image. Everything in my life looks normal. But inside, I feel confused and conflicted and distraught much of the time. Maybe everyone is right, and I need to sell the team and walk away with my dignity before it's too late. But some stubborn, selfish part of me won't let me do that. Some days can only be conquered through pump-up playlists and double shots of espresso, the kind of days that begin with extra concealer under my eyes and end with me falling into bed exhausted, with some whirlwind of chaos for the 12 to 14 hours in between. Lately, I call these days normal, and they're a gentle summer breeze compared to the tornado I've been living through the last week. Which is why, somewhere between observing the team's morning skate and my fifth brand sponsorship meeting of the week, I sent an SOS text to Gretchen, insisting we pencil in some much-needed girl time. 2 hours later, she's booked us mani-pedi appointments at my favorite nail salon, and now, after making liberal use of the massage functions of this pedicure chair, I'm beginning to feel like a new woman. As the cloudy water spirals down the drain of my foot bath, David, my favorite nail guy, slips a flimsy pink pair of foam flip-flops onto my freshly exfoliated feet, then motions me toward the manicure station. Gretchen has already settled in at her station for the fancy hot towel treatment she booked, and I pad over to join her, tossing my long empty coffee cup into the trash can on the way. "You've got to stop drinking coffee this late in the day, girl," she says as I sink into the seat next to hers. She'd probably wag a finger at me, too, if her hands weren't wrapped in hot eucalyptus-scented towels. While I didn't spring for the deluxe treatment, just catching a whiff soothes my nerves. "I will, I promise. Just as soon as the season ends and I'm not losing half my sleep to stress dreams involving my late grandfather shooting hockey pucks at my head." Before she can take a crack at psychoanalyzing that nightmare, David interrupts her, shaking a bottle of bold emerald polish in my direction. It's the perfect shade of Boston Titans green.
"This is your color, right?"
I nod, resting my wrists on the terry cloth towel. Normally, I stick to pale pinks and nude tones, but if ever there was an occasion to paint my nails Titans colors, it's the first game of the season, which is in less than 24 hours. For my toes, however, I stuck to my favorite shade of ballet slipper pink. Old habits die hard. While David gets to work filing my nails into the perfect almond shape, Gretchen scoots her chair an inch or two closer to mine, turning her shoulders to lean into whatever gossip she's about to launch into. "So, is it true that they're adding extra security detail for the team this year? I read this whole article about it, but some fans say it's just talk." For David's sake, I try not to flinch.
"Since when do you read the hockey blogs?"
"Since my best friend became the owner of a professional hockey team," she says, the "duh" implied. "And especially since said friend became the subject of some crazy protests." My stomach clenches at the reminder. Things have quieted down a bit since the initial announcement, but I'm not optimistic enough to believe the fans are on board with me quite yet. There's speculation of another march outside the stadium before tomorrow's game, too. Gretchen frowns, worry brewing in her deep brown eyes.
"Jesus, I'm so sorry. Who knew hockey fans could be such dicks?"
"And sexist," I say with a huff. "Sometimes I think this city would be happier with a golden retriever for an owner, so long as it's male."
"I, for one, think you're doing a way better job than a golden retriever," she says.
It's not much of a compliment, but it makes me laugh, which is something I haven't done a whole lot of lately. "Well, I'm glad my fan club has at least one member. Maybe if we win tomorrow, I'll get a second and a third." Gretchen's smile fades, her voice dipping to a strained whisper.
"And what if you lose?"
I heave out a shaky exhale, focused on the tiny nail brush David is wielding like a Michelangelo of manicures. Admittedly, I've been ignoring the very real possibility of a loss.
"Then maybe I'll be glad management hired the extra security. Personally, I think the protesters are all bark and no bite, but you can never be too careful these days."
Gretchen finishes my thought, then steers the conversation in a more positive direction.
"I'll bet the extra security has you feeling better about things, though, right?"
My heart kicks in my chest. I've been having plenty of feelings about our security detail lately, very few of them having to do with my safety. In fact, 100% of those feelings revolve around a certain tall, smoky-eyed man who seems to be occupying the corners of my mind in the least professional of ways.
"Well, I'm feeling all kinds of ways. Actually, I've been meaning to ask you about one of our security guards," Any chance you remember Holt Rossi? She's silent, and my gaze wanders back to hers just in time to watch her nose crinkle in thought. That name sounds familiar, but I'm drawing a blank. He graduated from Sutton the same year we did. Really big guy, kind of a loner type. There's a whole arsenal of other more flattering adjectives I could use to describe him. Tall, broad, mysterious, a better kisser than any man has the right to be. Need I say more? After another quick pause, Gretchen's eyes brighten with a flicker of recognition.
Oh yeah, Rossi. Wasn't he involved in breaking up that fight at the frat house the night you were trying to hook up with he who must not be named?
You can say Alex's name, Gretch, I say gently. He's an ex, not a hex. She shrugs.
I know, I just think he doesn't deserve to take up any more time in our conversations than he already has for the last 6 years.
She gives me a sly smile. I'll give her that. But I don't think Gretchen understands that working in close proximity to Alex is its own special kind of torture. If only I didn't know how tense he got after a game, maybe my hands wouldn't itch to rub his shoulders. If I were able to forget how hard he was on himself following a loss, I wouldn't care about how hurt he probably was. But caring for Alex is no longer my role. He made his decision. He was the one who broke things off, the one who wanted to be single, and he got his wish. So why doesn't he seem any more at peace? I'm not sure. But it's no longer my job to comfort him. Now he has puck bunnies for that. And according to some of the locker room chatter I've overheard, he's making good use of their skills.
Anyway, back to Holt, Gretchen says with a wiggle of her eyebrows. Did he remember you from Sutton or something?
I nod, my teeth habitually finding my lower lip. I never told Gretchen about my one-night history with Holt. It didn't seem important enough to share at the time. It was just a one-time thing, after all. A fling. A fluke. So when I slipped out of his bed and scrawled my goodbyes on a scrap of paper, that was that. He was in my past, where I thought he'd stay. And he did. Up until now.
Yeah, he remembered me. And I remembered him too, of course.
I can't disguise the nervous hesitation in my voice, and Gretchen catches it right away, her gaze narrowing with a devilish gleam.
What's going on?
Her voice is a low, suspicious whisper.
Did something happen between you two?
Something? Damn near everything happened between us, all in one whirlwind of a night. I used to think Holt was a one-time thing, an error in judgment on my part. It used to bring me shame thinking about my night with him. I went to that party determined to get the fun-loving hockey player to notice me, and instead hooked up with the rugged loner. Afterward, I felt ashamed, and Holt was the anti-hero in my story. An adult now, I know better than to be ashamed of my actions that night. A hefty dose of hormones and misplaced lust sent me into Holt's bed. I couldn't blame myself. The man is very attractive in a brooding, outcast kind of way.
We actually, we hooked up once,
I murmur, trying to keep this public conversation as private as possible. Unfortunately, Gretchen doesn't take the hint on my preferred volume for this topic. Her jaw falls slack, releasing a sound that falls somewhere between a gasp and a squeal.
Holy shit, no way! In the arena?
Oh my god, no, I whisper shout. This was back in college.
Oh.
She's quiet for a long moment, then her lips purse, suppressing a smile.
I kind of wish it was in the arena instead. At least I'd know you were getting some action since you know who.
Sorry to disappoint, I say with a laugh.
But wait, when in college was this? I can't believe I didn't know. Was this before we met?
I shake my head. It was actually the same night you remember. The one of the fight at the frat house. I went off looking for Alex and Holt found me along the way, and then a flush creeps across my cheeks.
And then we hid out in his room, drinking and talking, and... I don't finish the rest of that statement. David keeps his eyes down, focusing on my manicure. I'm sure he's heard much worse before, but still. While David is gone to get the hot towels for my manicure, I dish to Gretchen on the details of that night. Everything from the swigs of whiskey from his flask to the hastily written note in the morning. When I'm finished, I draw in a deep breath, the smell of acetone and apricot scrub serving as some small comfort as I wait for her reaction. But instead of one of the responses I'm expecting, like a wow or I can't believe I never knew that, her brows shoot up to her hairline, urging me to go on. And then, she presses for more, her eyes as wide as her smile. And then I started dating Alex a few months later, I say with a sigh. And you know exactly how that story ended. Disappointment flashes over Gretchen's face, then quickly fades to a small smile. And then 6 years later, your hockey team just so happens to hire his private security firm. Yep. Crazy coincidence, right? I don't think so. Her tone is matter of fact. I think it's a sign. A laugh bubbles out of me, but before I can tell her how ridiculous she's being, Gretchen's focus shifts to her manicurist, who keeps her gaze lowered and doubles down on buffing out the ridges of Gretchen's nails. By the time they're done discussing her desired nail shape, my best friend has other topics on her mind. So, what about you-know-who? My brows push together in genuine confusion. Do I know who? Her eyes roll so far back, I'm momentarily concerned they'll be permanently stuck that way.
You know? Alex! Do you think you're over him?
Alex and I are done, I say firmly. Plain and simple. If anything, he's helped me realize exactly what I don't want. No more hockey players and no more cocky assholes. Huh. Her lips lift in a smirk.
So someone like, I don't know, Holt Rossi?
Have you been huffing nail polish? I tease. What happened between Holt and me is so far in the past.
College wasn't that long ago, Eden.
She clucks her tongue, a self-satisfied smile spreading across her lips.
And do you really think it's just a happy accident that 6 months after your breakup, an old hookup from undergrad shows up in your life?
Yes, I do. I'm being short with her now, but I can't let this turn into a legitimate topic of discussion, especially not when Holt and I already wandered into dangerous territory discussing the fact that we're both very single at the moment. Naturally, my brain ran rampant with that information. Hell, I even told him about my clunker of a date Grandpa Pete set me up on. Why did I do that? So Holt would know I'm open to dating? Jesus. Thank God Les didn't leave the two of us alone for too long. I could have let our chemistry carry us away.
You're all set.
David caps the bottle of gold nail polish I didn't see him grab and dips his chin toward my nails, each one painted Kelly green with a touch of sparkle added to the tips. It's the kind of perfect touch only someone who has been doing your nails every week for 6 months would know to do. The fluorescent lights bounce off the tiny gold flecks in a way that's almost hypnotic. Maybe I can hypnotize myself. You will not think about Holt Rossi that way. You will not think about Holt Rossi that way. Jesus, I really need to change the subject.
So you're coming with me to the game tomorrow, right?
Gretchen's face sours, all her mischievous matchmaker energy disappearing in the blink of an eye. Note to self, bring up sports anytime you need Gretchen to drop a topic.
Do I actually have to watch the game?
She asks with a whine.
Come on, you're telling me you still don't care about hockey? Not even now that you're keeping up with the blogs? I care about you, she says to clarify. But I don't care about a bunch of sweaty guys fighting over a puck that, half the time, I can't even see.
It's not their fault you need an updated contacts prescription, I remind her. Maybe then you wouldn't have such a hard time keeping up.
I told you I'm nearsighted, she says stubbornly. So long as you keep the catering options near me, we won't have any problems.
A laugh spills out of me as I pull my credit card from my wallet. Just don't get too close to Holt, okay? I don't need you talking to him about the fact that he's apparently a sign. Gretchen holds up a freshly painted pinky.
Promise to try my best.
I give her a pointed look. That's not the same as promising not to talk to him. She shrugs, then shoots me a wink.
I said what I said.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's give it up for this year's Boston Titans!
Looking over the stadium from the executive suite, I feel like a queen surveying her kingdom. The seats are packed to the rafters with fans, their raucous applause sending a jolt of adrenaline coursing through my veins. It's been a stressful week, but tonight I feel nothing but pride. Every headache-inducing day and late night at the office has been leading up to this moment, the first game of the season, and I'm ready for my team to prove what they've got. As the team shuffles down the chute and out onto the ice, the sea of jersey-clad spectators leap to their feet, fists pumping and cheers echoing through the stadium. Moments later, our competitors take the ice. Let the games begin. Beside me, Gretchen rests her elbows on the glass half wall, watching the teams warm up with a look of determination in her eyes.
Which ones are our guys again?
The green jerseys. She frowns and squints.
But they're both green.
Stifling a laugh, I give her a reassuring pat on the shoulder. The Denver Avalanche are teal, Gretch. Don't hurt yourself. You can go get food if you want. She brightens at the mention of hors d'oeuvres, almost enough to make her enthusiasm about the puck drop seem genuine. As soon as the forward for the Avalanche takes control of the puck, though, she scuttles off to the buffet, returning a few minutes later with a plate piled high with spring rolls and chicken wings.
Want some?
I shake my head. No thanks, I'm not very hungry. Truth is, my stomach is probably about ready to eat itself, but my nerves have kept a vice grip on me all day, and I haven't been able to stomach a thing. Not unless you count the 2 oat milk lattes I've sucked down to keep myself alert. Maybe Gretchen has a point about my caffeine habits, but that's a conversation for another time. For now, my eyes are locked on the ice, my attention wandering only momentarily when I spot a certain broad-shouldered head of security standing one section beneath my box. A fluttery feeling stirs in my belly. Holt looks handsome as hell in that Boston Titans polo, even if the jewel tone does seem a little contrary to his personality. His usual black shirt and slacks complement his broody gray eyes and the dark stubble peppering his angular jaw, but I like him in green equally as much. Or maybe I just like the idea of him matching my nails. That's a worrying thought. I look away from him just in time to watch the Avalanche score the first goal of the game, and a few minutes later, the second. Shit. All the things I used to know about Alex seem to be thrown out the window. He used to love the thrill of speeding down the ice, the rush of adrenaline with each hit. But right now, he looks tired, worn out, completely over it. It's strange because he should be at the top of his game. He's single, just like he wanted, and he recently signed a lucrative deal with Rush Sports, one of Canada's biggest sporting goods brands. And not that I went looking, but I see photos of him on the hockey blogs from time to time with different women on his arm. A blonde in a silver dress he took to the ESPN Awards last month, and a buxom redhead he was photographed with leaving a nightclub the week after. I'm proud to report that these sightings have no bearing on my emotional state. After our breakup, I cried all the ugly tears, ate all the ice cream, binged on so many vodka sodas I didn't think I could ever enjoy one again. And now, it's as though Alex Braun has been purged from my system. I grieved the loss of our relationship, and my heart is in a good place, which is to say it's closed for business. The only thing I want to focus on at the moment is my career. By the time I look back to where he stood,
Holt has disappeared, replaced with a lankier blonde guard who I don't recognize. I'm more than a little disappointed by the swap, but I didn't come here to stare at security. I've got a team to keep my eye on. And now we're down by 2 in the first period, which is not good.
So where's that steamy security guy?
Gretchen, who must be a mind reader, nudges me in the ribs. She's no help in keeping my focus off of Holt and on my team, but I know my attention needs to stay on the ice right now. Only 7 minutes into the first period, and the Denver Avalanche have already sunk 2 slap shots past Bissett. Not the start to the season I was hoping for, but we still have plenty of game left to turn it around.
Hello?
Gretchen elbows me again.
Did you hear me? I asked, where's that hot bodyguard of yours?
He's not my bodyguard, I say, correcting her as my eyes still chase the puck. He's security for the whole team.
But you're not denying I'm hot, huh?
My stomach bottoms out to my kneecaps. That deep, husky voice definitely doesn't belong to my best friend. I whirl around, and sure enough, there he is, his gray eyes burning into mine and sending a wave of heat pulsing through me. I don't know if I'm smitten or embarrassed, probably some combination of both if I'm being fully honest with myself.
Hi, Holt,
I stutter, nervously adjusting the tuck on my green cashmere sweater. Paired with the shade of beet red I'm sure I'm quickly turning, I'll bet I look like a freaking Christmas ornament right now. Shit. Mental note to practice my poker face in whatever very limited free time I can scrounge up. Finding my voice, I gesture to my best friend, desperate to direct his attention toward anything but me.
You remember Gretchen from Sutton, right?
Gretchen wiggles her fingers in a wave, her lips lifting in a wicked smile as she assesses his broad frame from head to toe.
Eden was right. You are even taller than you were back in college. More muscular, too.
Forget turning red. My face feels like it's moments away from lighting on fire. I knew I couldn't trust this girl around Holt, and right now I could push her over the glass railing for that comment. But Holt just chuckles, pushing his fingers through his cropped chestnut brown hair as his gray eyes meet mine again. His voice is low, gritty, and suggestive as he says,
So you've been talking about me, huh?
Yep, it's official. I need to disappear right this second.
Well, I'm going to go grab some food.
I trip over my words, frantically searching for an escape route out of this conversation. Gretchen lifts one dark brow.
I thought you said you were too nervous to eat.
If ever there was a time I needed her to close that big mouth of hers, it's right now. I grit my teeth, forcing a smile and rattling off some excuse about feeling better now that the game has begun. I don't even fully process the words I'm saying. I'm too busy slipping hopelessly into Holt's stormy eyes. If I don't get away soon, I might drown in them. Flustered, I excuse myself, hurrying across the suite to grab the first bacon-wrapped snack I see and popping it between my lips. Yes, my stomach is still in knots, but I'll do anything to look occupied right now, especially if it means my mouth is too full to say anything stupid. The taste of maple rushes over my tongue, then gives way to something not so familiar. Rubbery, almost? I tilt my head, trying to place the flavor as I slowly chew the buttery substance, letting it melt on my tongue, which, the more I think about it, is starting to tingle a bit. Since when is bacon spicy? I look up to see one of the caterers smiling at me.
Enjoying the bacon-wrapped scallops?
Scallops. Oh, dear God. No. Frantic, I snatch up a cocktail napkin, spitting the partially chewed food into it. But it's too late. My tongue has already begun to swell, filling my mouth with a fiery, itchy sensation. The caterer's brow furrows.
Are you all right, Ms. Nguyen?
No, I choke out, panic rising in my throat. I'm allergic to shellfish.
Chapter 10. Holt. Are you okay?
I'm all right,
Eden says from beside me. Her voice sounds slightly high-pitched, and I can tell she's more affected than she initially let on by this allergic reaction in the middle of the first game. But as the guy in charge of taking care of her, this is all in a night's work. I would do anything to make sure she's safe, including rushing her to the nearest emergency room at 9 o'clock on a Thursday night. She was so adamant at first that she was fine, but her tongue started to swell, and she admitted her throat was itchy. Les and Gretchen helped me talk her into going to the ER out of an abundance of caution, and while she wasn't initially happy with the idea, Eden finally agreed during the first intermission. I know she doesn't want to miss the game, or cause any more of a commotion than she already has, but her health and safety will always come first. When I give her another look, she waves me off.
Seriously, I'm fine.
What's your favorite kind of music? I ask. Eden taps her knee nervously in the passenger seat beside me.
I don't care, just put anything on.
I look over and give her a smirk. I'm just trying to distract you, trying to keep you talking. She meets my eyes with a soft look.
Oh, right. Okay, I guess I'll play along.
Perfect. Favorite music? I ask again.
Rock,
she says, her eyebrows pushing together.
Classic or grunge, 90s preferably. It's such an underrated decade in terms of music.
You think so?
Absolutely. I mean, the Smashing Pumpkins, Fuel, Oasis, Nirvana.
I nod. I went through a big incubus phase. She laughs.
You?
It's the first time I've heard her laugh since this whole ordeal began, and I really like the sound of it. I like 90s too. I turn the radio on, and since it's connected to my Bluetooth playlist, I scroll through the list of bands until I land on Incubus. This okay? She nods.
Yeah.
I select the song Drive and press play. She looks over at me and smiles. Between that gorgeous smile that I don't deserve and the familiar lyrics now coming from the speakers, there's a sudden ache in my chest. Whatever tomorrow brings, I'll be there with open arms and open eyes. Eden taps her knee along with the rhythm, seemingly unaware of what these words mean to me. What I don't tell her is that the song Wish You Were Here was one I played on constant repeat after she bolted from my bed and my life. But I'm not brave enough to play it for her now. When the next song comes on, Pardon Me, the lyrics grab me by the throat the same way they did back then, deep in the despair of letting a girl like Eden slip through my fingers and right into the arms of a colossal dickwad, namely Alex Braun. That was what killed me. I knew I wasn't good enough for her, but a douchebag like him supposedly was. Soon, those heartfelt lyrics were replaced by angrier ones, and bands like Rage Against the Machine took over my playlist. It's quiet in my car, and I'm aware of every little thing. The way Eden's petite frame fits into the seat beside mine, her fingers between her knees, the floral scent on her skin, the way the air seems charged between us. How are you feeling? We're almost there.
I'll be fine. Throat feels a little scratchy.
Hang in there for me. I place my hand on her knee and give it a reassuring squeeze. I wish I wasn't, but I'm all too aware of how warm her skin feels through her jeans and how long it's been since I've touched her. Pulling my hand away, I clear my throat. Eden seems unaffected, staring straight ahead out the windshield. Get it together, Rossi. When we arrive at the hospital, the check-in process is brief. And then we're waiting together in the exam room. Eden doesn't say much. She just stares at a poster of a thyroid gland on the wall. I have no idea what she's thinking, and even less of a clue about what to say to her. It doesn't take long for them to administer an injection of epinephrine. I hold her hand, and when the nurse assumes I'm her boyfriend, neither Eden nor I correct her.
After being given a packet of antihistamines to take home for the hives on her chest, Eden signs some paperwork, and then we're strolling back through the exit less than an hour later.
Are you okay? I ask.
I'm so sorry about all of this. What a mess.
She shakes her head, looking down at her feet. Not wanting her to feel ashamed, I touch her shoulders, turning her body toward mine in the parking lot. Hey, this isn't your fault. She bites her lip.
It's a little bit my fault. If I hadn't been so flustered, I would have paid attention to what I was putting in my mouth.
Neither of us brings up the topic that had her flustered. Eden and her friend had been gossiping about me. But it would be a dick move to press her right now. She's obviously upset. When we reach my car, she grabs her phone, which she forgot in our rush to get into the hospital. She checks the score right away and turns to me with a smile.
We're up 3-2, 4 minutes left in the game.
Nice, I nod. When I start the car, it takes me a minute to find the sports station, but when I do, we sit in the parking lot, listening to the remaining 3.5 minutes of the game. In the end, the Titans win it. Congrats, I say, giving Eden a grin. How does it feel to own a winning hockey team? She chuckles.
I feel pretty damn good right now.
As you should. I pull out into traffic, which is heavy because the stadium is only a few blocks away. Is your car at the arena?
No, I rode with Gretchen.
I'm happy to take you home. Eden meets my eyes with a look of gratitude.
That would be great.
She sends and receives a few congratulatory texts as I drive. The jealous part of me wonders if she still texts with Alex, but the smarter, more rational part of me reminds me that it's none of my damn business who she texts with. Hell, maybe she's still fucking him on the side. Even then, it wouldn't be any of my concern. Eden is a gorgeous, successful woman. Of course she doesn't lack for male suitors. I drive back to her building, which isn't far, and Eden instructs me about where to park.
You can stop here. I'll just hop out.
I shake my head. I'm walking you up. She doesn't say anything further, just waits patiently for me to find parking nearby. Once I do, we head side by side into the building with its grand lobby and row of shiny silver elevators. She lives in a mid-rise building of luxury condos that exceed my budget by several million dollars. The location is prime, and the views are outstanding. She unlocks the door and lets us in, setting her purse on the entryway table and flipping on lights as she moves farther inside. The place is quiet and dark, except for the streetlights glittering from the windows a few stories below. It's nothing at all like the last time I was here, when the room was filled with testosterone and loud hockey players. Now it's just me and her, a scenario I like much better. Am I intimidated by Eden's job or the fact she's constantly surrounded by some of the world's most eligible men? No, not really, anyway. Her place is cozy and modern with wide-planked wood floors and dark gray cabinetry. The huge dark-paned windows are framed by white linen curtains. Not a thing is out of place. There's not so much as a coffee cup in the sink. It makes me wonder if she's super neat and tidy, or if maybe she has a cleaning crew on retainer. I bring her a glass of water from the kitchen, and she swallows one of the antihistamines.
I'm so relieved we won tonight,
she says, setting her phone on the charging tray on her kitchen counter.
It almost makes me forget about my blunder earlier.
Her eyes stay on mine as I move closer to her. When I stop directly in front of her and tip her chin toward mine, her lips part. You look better. Your coloring has returned and the swelling has gone down.
I feel fine now,
she says softly. Her gaze lowers to my mouth, just briefly, but it's impossible to miss the look of longing in her eyes,